I'm a little boy with glasses, the one they call a geek. A little girl who never smiles, cause I've got braces on my teeth. And I know how it feels to cry myself to sleep. I'm that kid on every playground who's always chosen last. A single teenage mother trying to overcome my past. You don't have to be my friend. Is it too much to ask? Don't laugh at me, don't call me names, don't get your pleasure from my pain. In God's eyes, we're all the same. Someday we'll all have perfect wings. Don't laugh at me. I'm the cripple on the corner, you pass me on the street. I wouldn't be out here begging if I had enough to eat. And don't think I don't notice that I rise never meet. I lost my wife and a little boy, someone crossed that yellow line. The day we laid them in the ground, the day I lost my mind. And right now I'm down to hold this little cardboard sign. So don't laugh at me, don't call me names, don't get your pleasure from my pain. In God's eyes, we're all
That's right. Don't laugh at me. This here is Big Dot, better known as Missionary Kenneth Wolfgang, with you on another Jumbo Braille program here on the Six Eyes Radio Network, the one and only program here on the Six Eyes Radio Network that can be felt. Saying welcome one, welcome all to the program today, especially our surrounding city and states, our countries near and far, as well as those who called 515-605-9340, just press the number one, join the conversation. We'll be glad to hear from you, as we will be in our book club once again with our book, Lucky Penny, by Katherine Anderson. We'll talk about that in here in a wee little bit. But first, Ghost Dot, better known as Sister Ruth, who do we got with us?
Well, we got God the Father, God the Son, as the Holy Ghost, band of angels with you and me.
All right. Well, I guess then we'll just go ahead and discuss a little bit where we've been. Of course, we got David Paxton. He's one of the Paxton boys with Ace as his big brother, the well-known gunslinger. He's got his brother Joseph, Eden's his sister, but Isa, And so these guys, they're all together. And what happened is we are now in the fourth book here of the Coulter Family Historical. That's the reason they're called the historical books here, is because they take you back in history where the Coulter family, who will be in the next few books that are in the, quote, modern day, the 1990s, 2000s, etc., where those fellers came from, basically their ancestors. That's why it's the historical books. So these are the books back in the 1800s, the late 1800s, early 1900s. These are the ancestors way back then. So here's Joseph Paxton and his brothers, but of course David now, we're talking about David, and he has run into a lady kind of unknown to him via some postman from Denver, drops off in no name a big package of mail that was supposedly left by this lady, Brianna Paxton, at the post office there, that was sent there to a David Paxton that she had been writing to this guy that was supposedly supposed to be her husband, who was supposed to be a minor. There's no minors named David Paxton anywhere in the Denver area. So David, reading a couple of the letters, especially the ones from the little girl, this Brianna's daughter, Daphne, he feels sorry. He sends him some money. And then later, after talking to his older brother, Ace, who has become, if you will, the daddy of the family, since the real daddy had died in a sham hanging, well, David decides to go and check this out, see if there really is another David Paxton. And if so, hey, maybe this lady ain't even his. But if there isn't, maybe, just maybe, he got so stone drunk one night and he got her pregnant and he has got a daughter that he has no clue that he even knew that he had. So he goes, checks it out. No David Paxton exists. So he goes to Glory Ridge, where this lady Brianna and Daphne is. Lo and behold, in the street, he goes to grab this penny in the street, and lo and behold, this girl, who happens to be Daphne, is reaching for it at the same time. They almost bump heads. He realizes this is Daphne, and it's like, hey, he's looking at a younger version of his mother. He realizes this is Daphne, and wait a minute. Hey, this girl must be mine. So he challenges her mother, Brianna, but come to find out, the so-called mother is not really a mother. It's due to a rape of her twin sister is how Daphne came to be. And Daphne's not even this lady's daughter. And so she has been playing off that she is the mother because the sister had died in childbirth. So she's been raising this girl as her own and taking on this guy in a fake way because of a previous employer, and it was some story she made up. But now all of a sudden David, the real David Paxton, has come and has now challenged her story and went to a court trial with him. The judge says, hey, you must be the real David Paxton. Gives him a sham kangaroo court marriage. They take off because she tried to run, but David thwarted her efforts. And lo and behold, they're riding. And then all of a sudden, she's thinking, okay, he's wanting to steal Daphne and leave her high and dry, because she thinks she's some ruffian trying to steal the girl to sell her across the border. But then lo and behold, some ruffians show up, three ruffians show up, and they wanted to do some harm. But then he told them, hey, you guys better give me a wide berth. So they leave him alone, at least early in the day. Later that night, they get into a gunfight. And as we ended the story, our last reading, he had killed these men, hid their bodies in a copse of trees, and had just got done burying these guys, going through their pockets to find some sort of identification so he could give the anything that they had on them to the surviving relatives. And that's where we left the story last time. So, okay, Ghost Dot, did we still pick up anybody while I was yakking there?
No, it's just us and the Lord.
Okay. Well, then, because of that, we will let you go ahead with the preliminaries, and then we'll get right into our story tonight.
All right. Well, tonight we'll be reading Lucky Penny, Coulter Family Historical Books by Katherine Anderson, Book 4, read by J. Michael McCullough. We'll be reading Chapters 14, 15, and 16. Take it away, Kenny, on the Six Eyes Radio Network. Yay!
Chapter 14. Morning brought warmth and sunlight that pooled on the rolling grassland like puddles of melted butter. Brianna was miserable in the hot, heavy jacket, but modesty made her hesitate to take it off. She didn't complain or mention her discomfort, so she was surprised when David approached her with his last clean shirt. "Take off the coat and wear this today. It's not much, but it'll give you cover." "But then you'll have nothing clean to wear." Dark blonde hair lifting in the breeze, he shrugged off her protest. "I can get our clothing washed in town. Even if there's no real laundry, there are usually a couple of women who make extra money doing people's wash." Brianna sent him a wondering look. "Town?" He patted one pocket of his duster. "A place near here called Clabbered Flats. I have some business with the marshal there." His blue gaze held hers. "If I take you and Daphne along, can I trust you not to cause me trouble by demanding to see a judge or telling some stranger I kidnapped you?" Only desperation had made her consider doing that. Now that she knew for certain he had no nefarious plans, the biggest problem she faced was his steadfast belief that he was Daphne's sire. Until he came to accept the truth, he had the upper hand, legally. The marriage document in his saddlebag gave him inalienable rights, not only as Daphne's father, but also as Brianna's husband, and her chances of prevailing against him in a custody battle were slim. She couldn't provide the little girl with a home, and she presently didn't even have a job. Any judge would assess her situation and rule in David's favor. Her smartest course of action was to accept the present circumstances and wait until David came to realize his mistake. Until then, she had nothing to gain by causing trouble and everything to lose, namely her daughter. "You needn't worry on either count, David. I give you my word." Brianna expected him to say her word wasn't worth much, but instead he merely nodded. "Good. A real bed will be welcome, and the animals deserve a rest, too." Brianna glanced at the horses. "What will you do with the extra mounts?" "If I can learn the identity of those men, I'll try to sell them and split the proceeds between their families. If not, I'll see if the livery stable will take them, I guess."
"I found another one," Daphne called.
Brianna turned to see her daughter emerge from a thicket, holding a rock almost larger than she was. David loped over to relieve the child of the burden. "Sweetheart, don't lift rocks this heavy. You'll hurt yourself. Besides, we've found enough." Daphne scampered after him as he lugged the stone over to the copse.
"But, Papa, it's extra pretty with red in it. It'll make our monuments more special."
Brianna stripped off the coat and donned David's shirt, which was red with a stand-up collar and white buttons down the front. Monuments? What would that man dream up next?
rather than upset Daphne with the truth that he'd killed three men, he told the child that he wanted to build monuments to commemorate how lucky all of them had been last night. Now, according to David, whenever they passed this way, they'd remember how God had watched over them and kept them safe. Brianna followed them into the small clearing. To her, the mounds of rock looked like graves, not monuments. But David had the child thoroughly convinced. In time, Daphne would think back and recognize it for the gargantuan lie that it actually was. But for now, David was protecting her from the harsh realities.
Not there, Papa. Put it here.
David narrowed an eye at the child. It's heavy, and I'm not moving it again.
I'm sure.
Daphne beamed a smile when the rock was situated to her liking. Then she stepped back to survey their handiwork.
That is perfect.
She turned a sparkling gaze on Brianna.
That one's yours, Mama. After lengthy debate, we decided you should have the prettiest rocks because you're the prettiest of us all.
Brianna suppressed a shudder. How thoughtful, was all she could think to say. A slight frown pleated the little girl's brow.
Papa, why did we hide our beautiful monuments behind these bushes?
Thrown by the question, David sent Brianna an imploring look. She came to his rescue with,
Because these monuments are our special secret. We don't want just any old body to come along and see them. Oh,
Daphne brightened again.
I like having a special secret.
Minutes later, they had broken camp and mounted up. Daphne once again rode with David. Lucy and one of the extra horses were tethered to Blue's saddle. Brianna brought up the rear on Acorn, with the other two surplus animals trailing behind him. David cut across the stream. Brianna had no idea what direction they were going. Judging by the position of the sun, she guessed north. It didn't really matter to her, though, not anymore. She would never be truly lost with David as a guide. He seemed to possess some unerring instinct to find his way that she sorely lacked. When they came upon railroad tracks, they followed them. In what seemed like no time, they rode into Clabber Flats. The community was larger than Glory Ridge, with two short business streets surrounded by houses on small plots of land. Clothing flapped on clotheslines. A black and white dog tore out from his yard to bark at them, but kept a respectful distance from the horses. Shielding her eyes from the sun, Brianna saw two hotels, a restaurant, a bathhouse, and the usual stores. David drew their small caravan to a stop in front of the marshal's office. Leaving Daphne on Blue, he looped the reins over the hitching rail, employing a peculiar knot Brianna had never seen. When she tried to duplicate it with Acorn's leads, she ended up shrugging in defeat. David stepped over to do it for her. She tried to pay attention, but the breadth of his hands and the grace of his thick fingers distracted her. His wrists were nearly twice as wide as hers, dark brown from the sun and dusted with gold hair. Remembering the strength of his grip, she got a funny, fluttery feeling way low in her belly.
"You got it?" he asked.
What Brianna got was that she'd somehow waded into trouble up to her chin. She didn't mind coming to admire and respect David Paxton, but these other feelings, silly female feelings, were unwise. Eventually, he would want his freedom to resume that life he'd told her about last night. She had a very bad feeling that it included a woman. David was, well, extraordinarily handsome. It hit her every time she looked at him. She surely wasn't the only female to have recognized it. Oblivious of her mental turmoil, he said, "It's a simple, quick breakaway tie. Pull on this and you're ready to go." He demonstrated the technique. The reins fell away from the post, and then he redid the knot. "If the horse pulls back, it tightens." He jerked on the leather, and sure enough,
the reins cinched on the wood. You'll see men throw a double loop without tying any kind of knot to really secure the animal. I think that's foolish and unsafe for the horse.
He fixed his gaze on her face.
You okay, Shamrock?
Diana couldn't think how to respond. She was wishing she could perfect that knot to keep him tethered. They'd reached civilization now. Probably sooner than later, he'd investigate her story about Boston and learn that every word she'd spoken by the stream had been the absolute truth. The thought of watching David walk away, of never seeing him again, filled her with inexplicable sadness. I'm Rise's Rain. The moment she spoke, Brianna realized she was even starting to talk like him. Just a bit tired, I suppose. He went to lift Daphne from the horse, swung her into Brianna's waiting arms, and then led the way into the lawman's office. The marshal, a young fellow with a shock of sandy hair, glanced up from his desk. Brianna barely glanced at him. Her gaze was glued to the wanted posters affixed to the wall behind him. David, she realized, was looking at them too, and the tick of his jaw muscle told her she'd guessed right. Three of the likenesses were of the men he'd killed last night. Each of them, wanted dead or alive, had a $250 reward on his head. Well, well, David said softly as he flipped back his duster to reveal his badge. I'm Marshal David Paxton, out of No Name. He reached across the desk to shake the other man's hand. I had a run-in last night with those three gents. The lawman turned to look. His expression went grim as he returned David's regard. You kill him? David glanced meaningfully at Daphne. Let's just say they realized the error of their ways and hightailed it to a better place. He reached into the pocket duster and plopped a knotted blue handkerchief on the desk. You got any idea how to get in touch with their next of kin? The other marshal nodded. I know where they hearkened from. It should be easy enough to locate family. Good. David patted the bundle. Divide it three ways so their relatives can divvy up their shares. He hooked a thumb over his shoulder. I've got the mounts and gear outside. Nice animals. You know anybody in the market for good horses and tack? I reckon I can find some interested parties. The marshal of Clabbered Flats arched both eyebrows at David. Normally, before I send a telegraph for reward money, I require... He broke off and slanted a thoughtful look at Daphne, perched on Brianna's hip. Proof, I guess is the word, that they did indeed hightail it off to a better place. David leaned over the desk, grabbed a piece of paper and pencil, and jotted something down. There's the location, if you're bent on proof. You'll find three beautiful monuments there. Winking at Daphne, David added, but keep it a secret. My little girl doesn't want just any old body to know where they are. Hooking a thumb over his shoulder, David went on to say, personally, though, a man's horse, saddle, and personal possessions are usually enough proof for me. Point taken. David nodded. I'll trust you to handle everything. I'd like the reward money sent to their families as well. When the horses are sold, same goes. You have my word. It's a fine thing for you to do. Most folks would want the rewards for themselves. I have no real need of it, and their families might. David turned to take Daphne from Brianna's arms. We'll head over to the livery. I'll cover the costs for the extra three horses tonight, but you'll need to make other arrangements with the owner until they're sold. He can take the cost of boarding them out of the sale proceeds, I reckon. Brianna followed David from the dim office out into the bright morning. Birds sang sweetly from the eaves of the buildings. A light breeze carried the scents of grass and wildflowers. Her eyes burned with the sting of repressed tears. She wanted to grab David's arm and apologize to him once again for the accusation she'd made last night. He was no thief.
He'd kept nothing from those men for himself, and he'd even turned down the reward money, which, in her opinion, tallied up to a small fortune. As they walked toward the livery, Brianna saw several nicely dressed women pause on the boardwalk to stare at her with stark disapproval. She glanced down at herself and realized she must look a fright, with David's bright red shirt calling fast attention to her appearance. Heat crept up her neck. She met those women's gazes with haughty disdain and judged their gowns to be only passable. Ready-made clothing from Montgomery Ward, no doubt, or the products of their own pathetic attempts at a sewing machine. She swept by them with her chin held high, too proud to let them see her embarrassment. David spent more than an hour at the livery getting all the horses settled in. After traveling with him, Brianna wasn't surprised that he insisted on seeing to every detail himself. He was a man who not only valued animals, but also appreciated their hard work. Before he sought to his own comforts, he would see to theirs. Brianna almost sat on a hay bale to wait him out, but that struck her as being lazy. So instead, she went with Daphne to care for Lucy and Acorn. At Rickers, Brianna had learned to man the business end of a pitchfork. She tossed fresh straw into the stalls while Daphne filled the water buckets and struggled to dump 2 leaves of fresh hay into the troughs. They were weighty burdens for a little girl to manage. Watching her daughter, Brianna felt her heart swell with pride. She was fast becoming quite the horsewoman. Lucy adored her, and Acorn nuzzled the child appreciatively, as if he sensed that their relationship would be one of long standing. When David was satisfied that the animals would fare well for the night, he led Brianna and Daphne from the stable. Brianna expected him to head directly for one of the hotels. She yearned for a bath, and then she wanted to stretch out on a real bed. But David grasped her elbow and veered left toward the town's dress shop. "Daphne and I need something fresh to wear while our clothes are being laundered," he said, his voice laced with underlying firmness. "For now, something ready-made will do us, so while you're in this shop, selecting a couple of nice dresses in your size, I'll take her shopping." Brianna dug in her heels before he could open the door. "I can't afford 2 dresses. I can't even afford 1. All I have is what remains of the money you sent Daphne." "You have that roll of bills I gave you last night. Spend some of it." His blue gaze bore into hers. "Don't hike your chin up at me like that. New clothing from the skin out, plus a pair of decent shoes and a nice cloak. No wife of mine is going to be snubbed by the wives of a bunch of clodbusters. When you leave this shop, I want you looking like a lady of substance." Brianna parted her lips to protest, but David had already turned away. Daphne, clutched in his strong arms, flashed Brianna a grin over his right shoulder. "Buy some pretty dresses, Mama. If you don't, Papa will be angry." Brianna, still wanting to protest, started to call out, but Daphne forestalled her with, "You said you'd ask how high, remember? He just told you to jump." David made fast work of finding clothing for Daphne that would do her for the night while her scanty wardrobe was laundered. He also bought himself a change of clothes. Before leaving the dry goods store, he stopped to buy his daughter a lollipop, which she promptly poked in her mouth. Holding her hand, he carried the bundle of purchases under his left arm as they angled across the street to the dress shop. David plopped the package on a bench just outside the door and lifted his daughter to sit beside it. "You stay here and enjoy your candy, okay? I want to help your mama choose some dresses, and most dress shop owners frown upon sticky little girls." Daphne tucked the orb of candy into her cheek.
"I'll be fine. I'll watch passers-by."
"Just don't leave the bench."
David glanced up and down the street. It seemed like a quiet town, but he didn't want his daughter off by herself.
"You understand?"
I won't move, she promised. David pressed a kiss to her forehead and had entered the dress shop to find Brianna shoving a dress back at the clerk, a slight white-haired lady with spectacles perched on the end of her bony nose. Right off, David liked her a lot more than he ever had Abigail Martin. She had a sweet smile and kindly gray eyes. That's far too much money, he heard Brianna say, and the color is too bold for me. I prefer subdued tones. David took in the dress. It was emerald green, almost the exact same color as Brianna's eyes. If it fits, she'll take it. Startled, Brianna whirled to face him, her expression taut with admonishment. I beg your pardon, sir. I'm quite capable of selecting a dress for myself. David almost chuckled. She only addressed him as sir when her temper flared. His shamrock had an explosive disposition under all that control. She constantly struggled to keep it under wraps, but it bubbled to the surface despite her efforts. That bothered him. Why did she try so damned hard to smother her true nature? She was a spitfire with a mean right hook, yet she pretended to be a meek lamb. A dress, he popped back. I told you to get four. Her cheeks went crimson. You most certainly did not. He said two, and I judge even that to be grossly extravagant. David didn't like being overbearing with a lady, but with her pride as an obstacle, he could see no way around it. He winked at the dressmaker. You've got a good eye. That color would be perfect on her. Do you think it will fit? The old lady knew a source of profit when she saw one. A twinkle lighted her gray eyes. Close enough. I can do some quick alterations to make it perfect for her. David waved his hand. Try it on, wife. Brianna sent him a look that put him in mind of Bess in No Name. Green fire meant to obliterate anything it touched. This dress is outrageously overpriced. I don't care how much it costs, David informed her. You, sir, are impossible. David didn't care if he was being impossible. He never again wanted to see her cheeks go hot with shame when she met better-dressed women on the street. She was his wife, damn it, and she would take second seat to no one. During the trying on stage, David stepped outside frequently to check on Daphne. When her lollipop disappeared, he took her up the street for a sarsaparilla and then parked her on the bench again while he went inside the shop to check on Brianna's progress. She stood before a mirror in the emerald green gown. Even with her hair in a tangle about her shoulders, she was so beautiful that she nearly took his breath away. The gown hugged her upper torso, showcasing her generous bust and slender waist, the skirt puffing out from there to shimmer over her hips, the slight bustle accentuating her delightful posterior. So far as David could see, the gown fit her perfectly. Sold, he said. I am not taking this dress. It's shameless. She tugged at the décolletage, trying to cover the plump swell of her creamy breasts, which were delightfully exposed. So delightfully that David's manhood sprang to attention. Forget it. She turned to the proprietress. What else have you in stock that might fit? Hold it. David strode over, doing his damnedest not to gape at the plump ivory orbs of her generous bosom. A bit of lace might work, he said to the shop owner. My ma does that with gowns that are a bit too revealing. I have just the thing. The little woman hurried behind a display case and set out several bolts of lace. David was no expert, but he had a good eye. Well, he knew what he liked to see on a woman anyway. He bypassed a russet and then a bright gold, thinking they'd both draw the gaze directly to Brianna's breasts. Well, hello. He didn't want the attention of every man to shoot straight to her bosom. He pointed to a sturdy jet black with a scalloped edge that was dotted with little holes. I like that one. Excellent.
excellent choice. Islet is substantial enough to cover, but delightfully intriguing to the male eye.
From the front, David decided the eyelet would cover Shamrock's attributes, but he didn't like that it was ruffled. He consoled himself with the thought that any man who got close enough to look down the flutes would be dead before he hit the ground. Jesus, Herbert Christ. He was feeling jealous, and if that wasn't crazy, he didn't know what was. He was the only man present. Rihanna huffed. My last desire is to wear anything intriguing to the male eye. David seconded that sentiment, but slapped his hand down on the eyelet anyway. You'd be intriguing to the male eye in a flour sack. Just shut up and let her and me figure it out. She and I, she corrected. David was in no mood for an English lesson. Gotcha. You're wrong. It'd make no sense at all if I said, let I figure it out. Rihanna gave him a heated look that could have wilted a healthy cornstalk. He nodded to the woman. Whip something up. He gestured at Brianna's astounding cleavage. I want my wife to look fabulous, mind you, but I just assume other men don't drool over much. Ah, a possessive husband. My Orville was a mite possessive back in the day. I, too, had to wear inserts with my more revealing gowns. The woman drew out a pair of scissors and cut a length of the black eyelet. This will do perfectly with a bit of tacky. David went to the dress rack while the two females fussed over the proper placement of the insert. He shoved aside a bright blue. Nope, not for his fiery-haired Shamrock. He needed colors that complemented her striking complexion. He came across a muted black silk. He liked that it wasn't shiny to distract from her skin, glorious hair, and fabulous eyes. Brianna didn't need adornment to make her sparkle. Oh, yeah, he liked this one. As he drew it off the rack, he pictured her in it. He stepped sideways to toss it on the counter. Let me see her in that one. Brianna looked at the price tag and gasped. David ignored her. Though he hadn't yet told her, they'd be taking the train home to No Name, and he'd be pickled like baby cucumbers if he allowed his wife to be scorned by other female passengers. Hell, maybe he'd even buy her a bonnet all decked out with silly ornaments. Fake birds were the current rage, with feathers going every which way. He wanted her to look wonderful when he presented her to his family. His ma was a fine lady and put a lot of stock in dressing well. Dory would box his ears if his wife wore rags that were about to pop at the seams. David came across a shimmery brown silk. When he held the dress up to the light, he caught flashes of green, bronze, and red as he twisted the hanger. Perfect. Looked at straight on, the dress was an unassuming brown, but on Brianna it would be pure decadence, highlighting the red flashes in her hair and the deep green of her eyes, and offsetting her ivory skin with the touches of bronze. He tossed that one on the case as well. And then he came across a deep gold day dress with capped sleeves, a low décolletage studded with emerald beads, and a waist sashed with shimmery jade silk. She'd look like a sultry angel in it. With a flick of his wrist, it joined the pile. David figured he had probably offended Brianna's delicate sensibilities enough, so he went outside to collect his daughter. After a spit bath, he judged her to be passable for a dress shop. Once inside, Daphne instantly became his ally, wooing over this and applauding that. David saw Brianna's shoulders slump and smothered a grin. Victory had a nice taste, but nothing, he thought sourly, could ever compare to the honey of Brianna's mouth, brief though his savoring of it had been. He wanted to sneak another quick kiss. Then she stepped out in the brown silk, her breasts plumping up like mounds of whipped cream over the scoop neckline. He forgot all about her lips, and his mouth went dry. On her, the dress went from ordinary to astounding, a shimmery rainbow of subdued color and lighting. His manhood went instantly hard. He sat on one of the two chairs against the wall, settled a book on his knee, and flipped his duster over his crotch, not wanting his daughter to see him in such dire straits. Brianna was enough to drive any man over the edge. An hour and a half later, Brianna left the shop with the emerald green gown, which had quickly been tucked, tightened, and let out where needed, and altered with a bit of black eyelet across the low neckline. In the sacks David carried were underclothes, three changes in all, the memory of which made his mouth water. Picturing Brianna in lacy underthings was nearly his undoing. Trudging beside him, she still wore her rags, but over them a new black cloak of fine wool rode her slender shoulders, its folds encasing her body to protect her from the wind, which had grown cool with the late afternoon. They'd pick up the other dresses tomorrow. David assessed the two hotels and led his little tribe toward the newer-looking of the two. At the desk, he signed in, ordered three hot baths, two snack plates for one room, one for his, beverages for his girls, and a fifth of Irish whiskey for himself, plus two cigars. While he soaked up to his chin in hot water, he meant to indulge in booze and smokes. He ignored the censorious spark in Brianna's eyes. She could go whistle Dixie and learn from experience that he wouldn't get roaring drunk, that he'd wash off the stench of the cigars and present himself at dinner sober and smelling nice. In the meanwhile, he would enjoy a manly bath. She and Daphne could do the female version. To that end, he ordered scented bath salts, leaving Brianna to choose what she wanted. She looked so startled at first by the suggestion, and then so troubled by the choices offered her that he suspected she'd never used bath salts or oils. She finally settled on a rose scent. David loved roses, and imagining her in that emerald green gown, smelling like a rose garden, made him go hard again. Jesus, he was in trouble. She wasn't ready for any advances from him. Maybe she'd never be. He needed to get his head screwed on straight, or he'd come in his trousers during supper. After her bath, which had been so luxurious she'd never wanted it to end, Brianna got dressed. Daphne, already scrubbed clean and wearing her new store-bought clothing, sat on the bed, ooing over Brianna's lacy underclothes, and then clapping her hands when Brianna donned the emerald gown. "Can you do me up and back?" Brianna asked. Daphne stood on the bed to fasten all the buttons. Then she sighed as Brianna stepped away. "Oh, Mama, you look like a princess." Brianna felt a bit like royalty. A hotel employee had already taken their soiled clothing downstairs for laundering with a promise that everything would be returned before checkout time at 11 the next morning. She was unaccustomed to being catered to. It felt decadent. Smoothing a hand over the green silk, she smiled at her daughter. "I've never possessed anything this fine. I still can't believe he spent so much money." Nibbling her lip, Brianna wondered how she would ever pay David back. The day would come when she'd have to settle up with him. The thought dampened her mood considerably. He had started to grow on her in more ways than she cared to count. The way he sat a horse, the cocky tilt of his hat brim, the scruff of whiskers that appeared each afternoon, even though he shaved of an evening, the slash that creased his cheek when he grinned, the way his blue eyes warmed and started to twinkle before any hint of a smile touched his mouth, and how lines appeared at its corners when he gazed off into the distance. And oh, how it touched her heart to watch him with Daphne as he taught her string tricks at night by the fire, ruffling her hair when she grew frustrated, and playing his fiddle to distract her when she was frightened by coyotes. Last night, he'd risked his life to protect them. And for the first time since leaving the orphanage, Brianna felt safe, no longer a woman alone in the world with no champion to defend her. It was such a comforting feeling, and when their so-called marriage ended, she would miss it. Stuff and nonsense, she chided herself as she stepped over to the mirror to check her hair. Would David think she looked pretty? The thought no sooner zipped through her mind than Brianna wanted to give herself a good hard shake. Why should she want David to think she was pretty? The man had turned her life upside down, and he could still take Daphne away from her. Even worse, when he finally realized the truth, that he wasn't Daphne's sire, he would promptly wash his hands of them. She couldn't allow herself to have these feelings. Only a foolish woman walked down such a thorny path, knowing that heartbreak waited at its end. A light tap came at the door. Daphne bounced off the bed to answer the summons. David poked his head into the room, his blonde hair still damp from his bath. He wore blue jeans with a just-off-the-shelf crease in each leg, a white shirt, and his boots, which appeared to have been wiped clean with a wet cloth. His badge winked above his left breast pocket. The Colts rode his hips, the wooden rips gleaming in the lantern light. To Daphne, he said, "Never open the door without asking who's there. It isn't safe." Then he shifted his gaze to Brianna. "Well, now, don't you look prettier than sunrise, sunset, and everything betwixt and between?" Brianna thought he looked awfully nice, too. She recalled the first time she'd seen him, how intimidating he had seemed to her then. Now he made her feel a host of different emotions, but fear wasn't one of them. He moved his gaze slowly over her. Then, as if realizing a beat late that he was staring, he looked at Daphne. "Am I a lucky fellow or what? Not every man receives the honor of escorting two of the prettiest ladies in the world downstairs for a sit-down supper." He caught hold of Daphne's hand and offered Brianna his arm. "You ready?" Brianna left the lamp low. Fishing the room key from her skirt pocket, she tucked her hand over his bent arm and stepped out into the hallway with him. Daphne was so excited she was dancing on her tiptoes. "I've never had a sit-down supper in a restaurant," she cried. David locked the door for Brianna and slipped the key into his trouser pocket. Brianna took his arm again as they walked along the hallway. At the landing, Daphne fell in behind them to go down the stairs. Brianna felt unaccountably tense. She assured herself it was because she'd only ever worked in a restaurant and had never been a patron, but deep down, she knew her nerves were leaping because of the man beside her. He made her feel feminine and beautiful. At the bottom of the stairs, he turned right toward the eating establishment, which adjoined the hotel lobby. The wonderful smells coming from the kitchen made her stomach growl. Startled, she touched a hand to her waist as a flare of heat crept up her neck. David didn't seem to notice. He grabbed Daphne's hand again and said, "I don't know about you ladies, but I'm so hungry I could eat the south end of a northbound jackass." Caught off guard, Brianna giggled before she could swallow it back. "Mr. Paxton, pray mind your manners." He flashed an irreverent grin. "You worry too much about manners, Shamrock. Relax and have fun for once." Refusing to have fun with David was nearly impossible. He was becoming more difficult to resist with each passing moment. He selected a round table near the bank of front windows. With a flourish, he seated Brianna first, and then, with equal fanfare, he pulled out a chair for Daphne. The child stared with round eyes at the artfully folded napkin that held court at the center of her place setting. She fingered the white linen tablecloth as if it were made of spun gold. David took a seat between them and signaled the waitress, a plump woman in a blue day dress with capped sleeves and an out-of-fashion bustle that ballooned behind her. "What can I get you, mister?" David winked at Daphne.
This is my daughter's first sit-down supper in a restaurant, so I'd like it to be special. She'll have a chilled sarsaparilla and a wine goblet as her before supper drink. My wife and I will share a bottle of wine, if you have any. The woman smiled. We have a nice red. Customers say it's quite good. David nodded. And what do you have by way of hors d'oeuvres?
Brianna, in the process of taking a sip from her water glass, nearly choked.
We have fresh fried potato chips with a mayonnaise dip, and we also offer a relish plate.
We'll have both, David said. We'll munch on those while we look at the menu.
Our special tonight is fried chicken, mashed potatoes with gravy, sweet peas, and a green salad. Hot bread fresh from the oven is served on the side with sweet cream butter. Or, if you'd rather, you could ask for biscuits.
David glanced at Brianna. That sounds wonderful, she told him.
Daphne piped in with, I haven't had fried chicken in a long, long time.
With a grin, David said,
No menus are necessary, I reckon. The special sounds good to me, too.
Gazing over at him, Brianna realized that though he was still the most rugged, dangerous-looking man she'd ever met, he was also unnervingly appealing. The warmth of his smile, the deep drone of his voice, the enticing scent of his bay rum facial invigorator, everything about him played upon her senses. Daphne was a chatterbox all during the meal, raving about the potato chips, her wine glass, and then her supper, which she claimed was the best she'd ever tasted. David insisted that the child have a tall glass of milk, and while waving her hands as she talked, Daphne sent the tumbler flying. Before Brianna could react to stop the flow with her napkin, white liquid spilled across the tablecloth and funneled down a drape in the linen directly onto David's lap. She was aghast.
Oh, dear heaven!
Brianna skirted the table to mop frantically at his lap.
Brand new jeans, and now they're soaked.
She turned a censorious gaze on Daphne.
You have been taught better, young lady. For shame bouncing about on your chair and waving your arms at the table.
Dab, swipe, dab. David's trousers were ruined.
I've a good mind to box your...
Brianna felt a hard, rod-like swell beneath the now drenched napkin and froze with her hand cupped over it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She jerked the sopped linen away.
Pardon me, I didn't mean to...
David met her startled gaze and winked at her, his blue eyes dancing with mischief.
I can't recall ever having enjoyed a spilled glass of milk quite this much. You can mop me up all you want.
Brianna straightened her spine and turned toward her chair, only to bump into the buxom waitress, who'd come running with a towel. They both tried to circle, but in the same direction, and collided once again. Brianna's dignity had suffered a severe blow by the time she collected herself and resumed her seat. The waitress, wiser than Brianna, handed David the towel to dab his wet lap by himself.
Thank you, he told her as he returned the crumpled linen. Another glass of milk for my daughter, please.
As the waitress walked away, Brianna drilled Daphne with her gaze.
And you shan't behave like an ill-mannered street waif and spill this one. Do I make myself perfectly clear?
Daphne's eyes went bright with tears.
I didn't mean to knock it over, Mama. It was an unfortunate accident.
Just then, a pea struck Daphne's cheek. She jumped as if she'd just been hit by a bullet. Both she and Brianna turned startled gazes on David, who had his fork poised for another volley.
That'll teach you to dump your milk in my lap. I don't get mad. I just get even.
With a flip of the timed flatware, he nailed the child again. This time, the projectile struck the tip of Daphne's nose.
You just gonna sit there and take that, or are you going to fire back?
Daphne's cheek dimpled in an impish grin, and she grabbed her fork, balanced the pea on the tines, and fired away. Brianna gasped.
David laughed when the pea splattered his white shirt and left a green smudge.
Oh,
he said with a deep, vibrant laugh.
You're going to get it now.
Brianna compressed her lips and watched in melting horror as little green projectiles flew back and forth.
You are making a terrible mess, she cried. We'll be asked to leave.
Her objection earned her a pea in the face, launched at her from David's fork.
David Paxton, I swear, you're the most
Another pea hit her on the neck and rolled down into the valley between her breasts. Face burning with mortification and no small amount of outrage, Brianna dipped her fingers under the insert of black eyelet and plucked the squishy thing out. When she had the pea between thumb and forefinger, temper overcame her good sense, and she threw it at David, hitting him dead center on the forehead. He looked so startled that she snorted with laughter, actually snorted. Where were Sister Teresa and her ruler? This was no way for a lady to behave in a restaurant. Only two other tables were occupied, but the other customers had to be gaping at them.
I have never in all my days been so embarrassed, she whispered.
David's response was to launch another pea at her. The absurdity of it was too much. Brianna snorted again and then went for her fork to fire back. Soon Daphne was chortling, David was chuckling, and Brianna found herself laughing so hard her sides ached. When they finally ran out of peas, she sank weakly back on her chair, feeling dazed and more than a little incredulous. She couldn't recall ever having had such a good time.
Now what? She asked him,
her voice faint from the drain of unbridled hilarity.
There are peas everywhere.
David settled back and silently toasted her with his glass of wine. As he took a sip, he frowned. A pea floated on the surface. He fished it out with his spoon.
The waitress will clean up the mess. I'll be sure to leave a hefty gratuity.
That was his answer? They'd all just behaved like orangutans that had escaped from a city zoo.
Such deplorable shenanigans are unacceptable in a public place,
Brianna told him, trying to regain some semblance of dignity.
Is this how you want our daughter to act in an eating establishment? We are duty-bound to teach her better.
We're also duty-bound to show her how to have a good time.
He winked at Daphne.
Don't forget your milk, and make sure to get it inside of you this time.
Daphne grabbed her glass and took several gulps. Her big smile was ringed with white. Brianna was about to scold when the child daintily wiped her mouth with her napkin.
I'm sorry if we embarrassed you, Mama.
Your mama can do with a little embarrassment, David said. She places far too much importance on manners and not enough on joviality. We all had fun. It was a great supper, and my jeans will dry. No harm done.
After Daphne finished her milk, David signaled for his tab. The waitress picked her way through the peas on the floor to bring it to him.
Sorry about the mess. We got a little carried away.
David lifted a hip to fish in his jeans for his money, then gave Brianna a look filled with humor.
You've got my clip.
Oh!
Brianna reached into the pocket of her skirt, found the roll of bills, and handed it over. David peeled off enough certificates to cover the bill and then topped it with a dollar.
To make up for the extra work we've cost you, I do apologize for the mess.
The waitress gave him a wide-eyed look.
That's very generous of you, sir. Thank you so much.
Brianna studied her daughter, whose cheeks had gone rosy. It had been far too long since Brianna had heard her daughter laugh with such abandon. It was a special gift, she realized, all wrapped up in a bow and presented to her by a charming desperado whose badge had winked at her every time he flipped a pea at the child. He pushed up from his chair.
Ladies, I think we've done all the damage we can for one night.
He helped Brianna scoop back her chair and then offered her his arm.
We're all due for a good night's sleep, I think.
Once upstairs in the hallway, Brianna shooed Daphne into their room to prepare for bed. As soon as the door closed, she turned to David.
Thank you so much for the lovely meal. It was made all the more special by the projectile entertainment, and I'm sure Daphne will remember it for a long while.
David, standing with his hands at his hips and his feet slightly apart, moved toward her. His big, work-hardened hand cupped her chin.
I'm your husband, he reminded her in a voice gone husky. There's no need to thank me for the meal. As for the entertainment, it was my pleasure.
He dipped his head. Brianna's breath caught, for she knew he meant to kiss her. It had been years since she'd allowed such a liberty, and even then she'd engaged in only quick pecks, never a real joining of lips. David had given her a quick peck last night, but she had a feeling that wasn't his usual habit. His face blurred in her vision. His breath, sweet with the scent of recently sipped wine, wafted over her cheek. She didn't know what to do with her hands, wasn't sure she even wanted this to happen. But David wasn't asking. He moved in with easy certainty, tipping her head just so as his lips settled lightly over hers. At the contact, all the breath rushed from her lungs. His mouth caressed hers like warm satin. Her eyes drifted closed. Her hands finally found anchor on the front of his shirt, her fingers clutching a bit frantically at the cloth as a delicious tingling sensation swirled deep into her core. When she felt the tip of his tongue trace the seam of her lips, she jumped with a start. He drew slightly back, his blue eyes sharpening on hers. A quizzical expression settled on his dark face. Then he smiled slightly. Sweet dreams, Shamrock. He tucked her room key into her hand and curled her limp fingers around it. Lock up tight. If you need me, I'm only one room away. Brianna's knees felt watery. She sank against the portal behind her for support, her lungs still hitching from the sensations he'd ignited within her. He paused outside his room, watching her expectantly. She realized he wanted her safely inside her chamber with the door secured before he sought his own rest. She turned to fumble with the doorknob, her hands shaking. Filled inside, Daphne sat on the edge of the bed, brushing her hair. She wore only the new shift David had bought her at the general store. Brianna had trouble fitting the key into the hole. When she finally got the mechanism to turn, she pocketed the apparatus and stood with her shoulder blades pressed against the door.
Are you all right, Mama?
Brianna wasn't certain. Her bones felt like candle wax that had softened from too much heat.
I'm fine.
Her voice sounded as if it belonged to someone else, faint and far away.
Just fine.
David kicked off his boots and shucked the damp jeans before flopping down on the bed to stare sightlessly at the shadowy ceiling. The smell of sunlight and spring breezes drifted up from the linens and blankets, telling him they were clean. He also caught the scent of beeswax coming from the furnishings. He was no stickler when it came to hotel accommodations, but he did like to know he wasn't using bedding that had been soiled by a stranger. Troubling thoughts circled in his mind as he considered Brianna and that brief kiss. She'd kept her lips clamped closed like an untried schoolgirl, and he'd felt the jolt of surprise that shot through her body when he tried to breach the barrier with his tongue. Then, when he drew back, her cheeks had been as red as California apples, and she'd been so flustered that he doubted she could have strung three words together. Strange. All his instincts told him that the woman had never been properly kissed. But how the hell could that be? She'd borne him a child, and David, drunk or sober, always kissed a woman before he took things any further. Maybe, he decided, she was just sorely out of practice. He sighed and let his eyes drift closed, his body yearning for sleep. But he had no sooner shuttered his peepers than he lifted his lashes again. Another thing about that kiss deeply troubled him. He'd felt no sense of recognition when he tasted her mouth. It was a very sweet, intoxicating mouth, and it amazed him that he had no recollection of having kissed her in the past. Granted, he'd locked lips with countless females, and he didn't remember every single one, but it seemed to him that engaging in that kind of intimacy with a beauty like Brianna should have stuck in his mind. How drunk had he been that night, anyway? Pretty damned drunk, he guessed. The thought shamed him. He twisted and punched his pillow. A feather escaped the ticking and stuck to his lower lip. He sputtered and scrubbed it away with the back of his hand. Then he sank into the down beneath him, determinedly closed his eyes, and willed himself to fall asleep. In the next room, Brianna, too, stared blankly at the ceiling. She had just turned off the lantern, and it still made a slight hissing sound. Beside her, Daphne had already snuggled down to snooze, her breathing deep and even. Exhausted, Brianna yearned for rest, but she was too upset to relax. So David had kissed her, and yes, it had been delightful, but what kind of ninny was she to go weak at the knees over it? She had to keep her wits about her with that man. He felt honor-bound to be a father to Daphne, and Brianna had to bear in mind that she was merely part of the package. He hadn't kissed her because he felt attracted to her. He was simply taking stock of the situation, and being a practical man, he had decided that a marriage of necessity might be more tolerable for both of them if they engaged in physical intimacy. Well, she wasn't about to be bamboozled by a handsome marshal with a weighty amount of guilt and obligation riding his shoulders. He was a good man. She'd come to sincerely believe that. But she wouldn't accept his affections when he offered them only out of a sense of duty. It was humiliating enough that she had succumbed so eagerly to that one kiss. Never again. She'd all but swooned. To melt like that when the man kissing her had only been pretending made her cringe with shame. Pigs would fly before she let it happen again. The next time David Paxton tried to kiss her, she'd set him straight in no uncertain terms. Willing himself to sleep didn't work. David tried counting sheep, but he remained wide awake, reliving that kiss. It had been incredible. At least for him, so much so that he'd almost lost it for a second. As arousing as it had been, though, he couldn't shake his impression that it had been one of Brianna's first. Baffled, David recalled Brianna's story about having a twin sister and growing up in an orphanage. What if she was telling the truth? Nah, Daphne's looks negated that possibility. She was definitely a Paxton. Still troubled, David drifted off to sleep and dreamed of the wonderful sound of his daughter's giggles. Then the dreams changed, and he jerked awake in a sweat, aroused by images of Brianna, naked and willing, in his arms. Vivid images. Maybe, he decided, he did remember her in some dark corner of his mind. Chapter 15. Because David now felt certain that Brianna would get no harebrained notions about trying to escape, he stuck to his decision the next morning that further travel on horseback was unnecessary. Leaving her and Daphne to linger over breakfast in the hotel restaurant, he walked up the street to the tiny train station to procure tickets to Denver, and then arranged traveling accommodations for the horses and mule. The train was due to depart at noon, so David went to the livery to collect the animals, enlisting the help of a stable hand to bring the riding tack, packs, and plenty of feed over to the stock car. All the gear, except his saddlebags, which he'd left at the hotel, was stowed in the baggage compartment. When he got back to the hotel, checkout time had come and gone. He found his wife and daughter waiting in the lobby. Brianna had gotten the key to his room, and his saddlebags plus hotel-stamped totes containing their laundry rested at her feet. "You could have just waited in the room," David told her. She waved away the suggestion. "They were going to charge you for another night. I don't think they're full, so I thought we could let more rooms if you decided to stay." She looked beyond beautiful in the emerald gown with the black cloak draped over her bent arm. Daphne was equally lovely in her yellow and brown frock and patent leather shoes, which had taken a beating out on the prairie, but were still presentable. David drew out his watch to check the time. They had only 40 minutes to collect Brianna's other dresses and accessories from the shop. David carried their belongings and herded his small flock out of the hotel and up the street. The dressmaker had finished the alterations and packaged the garments, leaving out only a black drawstring reticule and a brimmed black hat adorned with a mass of emerald green bows at the crown. While Brianna donned the bonnet, securing it with hatpins, David paid the bill, collected their things, and then allowed his ladies to carry the parcels as they hurried out onto the boardwalk. Dodging women shoppers and businessmen in trousers and frock coats, they all but ran to the opposite end of town. They had only 5 minutes to spare when they reached the closet-sized station. Wearing a black suit and billed cap, the conductor yelled, "All aboard!" Then he shouted the names of the towns where stops would be made. David wondered why. There were no other passengers that he could see getting on in clabbered flats. He juggled his saddlebags and bundles of laundry to dig the tickets out of his duster pocket, then boarded the train behind his wife and daughter. The passenger area, a far cry from the plush interiors that Ace had designed for his private train cars, was nearly empty. An older couple sat at the far end, and a lone gentleman sat at the middle right. David indicated a front compartment with a nod of his head. While Brianna and Daphne took places facing each other, he stowed all their stuff under the child's seat. "As we get closer to Denver, more travelers will join us," David told them. "For now, let's enjoy having the car mostly to ourselves." Brianna fanned her face. "But goodness, such a rush. I'm breathless." So was David, but not from exertion. Just looking at Brianna robbed his lungs of oxygen. The gown and fancy hat had transformed her from shabby to elegant. The cut at the corner of her eye was healing nicely and scarcely detracted from the perfection of her countenance. The insert of black eyelet, designed to conceal her cleavage, performed its job, but nothing save a cloak could hide the generous swells of her breasts above the ruffles. Daphne wiggled on her seat, reminding David of a worm squirming on a hook. She was so excited when the whistle blew and the train shuddered forward that her eyes danced with delight. He sat back, content to let her expend all her energy quickly so she'd fall asleep before the car filled with passengers at future stops. He needed to have a long, private talk with Brianna. Daphne took 2 hours to wind down. Brimming with questions, she kept both David and Brianna busy. What made the train move? How fast did it go? When the conductor left the car, what did he do? Where were Blue, Lucy, and Acorn? Did they have food and water? David figured the animals were more comfortable than they were. There was a dining car, but in his experience, the food would be pretty dismal. When the train stopped to refuel, they could go to a restaurant, but it would be a mad dash. The train wouldn't wait for any passengers late getting back. During the first leg of the journey, David couldn't help but admire Brianna for her determinedly cheerful attitude. Though her nether regions were still saddle sore, she didn't complain about the hard bench seat, and she was patience itself when Daphne grew cranky. David loved the kid,
but her constant chatter started to wear on his nerves. He wanted her to pipe down for 5 minutes and give his ears a rest. Finally, the child slumped in the window corner of her seat, her blonde head lolling against the glass. David nearly groaned with relief. He glanced over at Brianna. "Blessed silence at last," he whispered. "All this is so exciting for her. She was only an infant when I brought her out west." David decided to ignore that. He barely slept last night, and if Brianna started in with her convent story again, he wasn't sure he could hold his tongue. It was time for her to accept their situation and move ahead. "Now that she's asleep, we need to iron out a few things. Once we reach Denver, it'll be late at night, possibly the wee hours of morning. I'd like to make some decisions now while we're still rested and thinking clearly." "About?" Brianna arched the dark eyebrow at him. "If you still intend to dump me off in Denver, you'd best understand that you'll not be leaving me there without my daughter." David deeply regretted that remark. "I was angry when I said that. I didn't mean it." She folded her hands primly in her lap, only the white glow of her knuckles revealing her tension. "So what do you plan to do?" "I considered setting you up in your own dress shop," he ventured. "Denver would be an ideal location, with lots of wealthy ladies who might become patrons." He saw her stiffen and added, "Brief as our acquaintance has been, I've come to realize you'll never be happy living away from Daphne. It's only a morning's journey by train from Denver to No Name, though, so if you're interested in the idea, we could work it out. You could see her on weekends. There are plenty of bedrooms at my ranch. And during the summers, she could stay in Denver with you, and I could do the commuting." Her green eyes sparked with outrage. "I will never live apart from my daughter, sir." David had pretty much figured that out already. "All right," he said, striving to keep his tone calm and soothing. "We'll work something else out. Just understand that I've been thinking about all the possible alternatives, and they're problematic." "I don't care how problematic they may be. I will not be separated from my child. If anyone is going to live apart from her, it will be you." "I said we'll work it out, Brianna. Just calm down." She drew a shaky breath and relaxed her shoulders. "So, what are our options?" David took a moment to gauge his words before replying. "Well, for starters, I'm as determined as you are to be a full-time parent. I've missed 6 years of her life, and from now on, I want to be a proper father to her. Surely you can understand that." She indicated that she did, with a slight nod. "Anyhow," David went on, "I can't see how I can accomplish that if I don't live under the same roof with her." Brianna's eyes went round with apprehension. "But if I am bent on living under the same roof with her and you feel the same, where does that leave us?" David could think of no easy way to say it, so he just spit it out. "It leaves us living together." He held up a hand. "Think about it before you let that Irish temper get the better of you. I suppose we could maintain separate residences and share time with our daughter, but think how that would look to the people of No Name. Nobody would understand why a man and wife would choose to be married and live apart. Frankly, I don't care what the people of No Name think or say." "You will about the time it starts hurting our daughter. The gossip might affect Daphne more than us." "Oh, dear," she said softly. "Divorce isn't unheard of," David went on, "but it's still considered to be scandalous. Vicious tongues can draw blood, and I don't want it to be Daphne's. The way I see it, we are responsible for her existence, and that means we are the ones who should suffer the consequences. For her sake, I think we need to make every possible attempt to appear to be a happily married couple." Brianna stared with glistening eyes at their daughter, who was still deeply asleep. She said nothing. "There's a dress shop in No Name," David told her.
It has living quarters on the second floor. I've never been up there, but judging by the lower floor plan, I suspect the apartment is roomy. The proprietress is an older woman and often wishes aloud that she could sell out and go to live with her son in California. I'm pretty certain she'll negotiate with me if I offer a fair starting price. You've always wanted your own dress shop. She fixed him with a bewildered look. How did you come by that information? That I want my own dress shop, I mean. Daphne, when we're riding together, she talks nonstop. Brianna sighed again. That child needs a sock stuffed in her mouth sometimes. David chuckled. Ah, well, in this case, the information came in handy. So what do you think? Should I pursue the dress shop idea? As marshal, I divide my time between town and my ranch, often spending nights in the jail. It would be just as easy for me to sleep on a cot in the dress shop apartment. On the surface, it would appear that we're a happily married couple, recently reunited. No one will think it strange if I continue to spend some nights at the ranch to oversee my hired hands and do the books. Well, I must say I find this proposition more appealing than having to live in Denver so far from my daughter. But practically speaking, how can you and I make a charade like that work over a long period of time? Her gaze clung to his. I agree that Daphne's happiness is of the utmost importance, but what of your future? As far as our marriage goes, we both know the union may not be legal. In fact, I'm fairly certain it isn't. David couldn't argue with that. Brianna hadn't given her consent. There'd been only one adult witness instead of the required two, and the whole mess had taken place in the very worst kind of kangaroo court. Your point? Have you considered an annulment? If we both went together and filed for one, it would probably be easy to get. It was David's turn to stiffen. And? Until you realize the truth that Daphne isn't yours, I would be willing to live with the child in Denver so you might see her regularly. When David started to speak, she held up a hand. Hear me out. You spoke the other night about having your life all planned before you got my letters. I believe those plans involved a woman. Am I wrong? David stared beyond her out the window, the passing scenery nothing but a blur. No, you're not wrong. There was a woman, but it wasn't. She cut him off to say, with the marriage annulled, you would be free to marry her, David, and have other children. You're so wonderful with Daphne. You'd be such a fabulous father. Even if it makes you furious with me for mentioning it again, I can't help but feel I must out of fairness to you. She is not your child. And when you finally come to realize that, you're going to resent me and her for ruining your life. A burning sensation crawled up the back of David's throat. Are you finished? She searched his gaze. Yes. Quite finished. Just never let it be said that I have withheld the truth from you or that I set out to hoodwink you. He laughed, the sound bitter even to his ears. God knows I'll never say that. You've told me your truth a dozen times. Enough. All it does is infuriate me. I'll never believe that child isn't mine, and I'm not about to have her live in Denver. So get that idea out of your head. I've offered you an alternative. Take it or leave it. Pretending to be a happily married couple? What if I say no, David? What if I believe such a charade will never work? All I know is I'm not parting company with my daughter. And neither am I. Disgruntled, David shifted on the seat, moving his hat from one knee to the other. Then we're at loggerheads. If you can accept the no-name dress shop idea and the pretend marriage, maybe we can work at making it a real marriage over time. In the end, it will be best for Daphne if her parents are able to give her a real family. Still embarrassed about the kiss they had shared last night, Brianna watched the passing landscape for a moment before speaking.
On the subject of working toward making this a real marriage, I must warn you that I want no part of marital intimacy. Without love, or at least some measure of genuine desire on both our parts, it would be debasing. I will never be with a man simply to keep up appearances. He said nothing, and his continued silence finally forced Brianna to look at him. His eyes twinkled with humor, which was at least an improvement on the anger she'd seen in them moments ago, but she had the uneasy feeling the joke was on her. "May I ask what is so funny?" His firm mouth tipped into a grin, as if he harbored a hilarious secret he wasn't willing to share. "You have my word that I will never press you for intimacy unless there is love, or at least some measure of genuine desire on both our parts. With that agreed upon, can we move ahead with the dress shop idea and pretending for a while?" Brianna couldn't see that she had another choice. "So long as we both agree on the intimacy stipulations, I suppose we can give a life of pretense a try," she conceded. Satisfied with Brianna's response, David stretched out his legs and settled back with his hat over his eyes to take a nap with his daughter. Problem was, he couldn't sleep. Brianna wanted there to be love in the relationship, and he wasn't sure anymore what love was. He definitely enjoyed that kiss last night and would happily go for seconds, but that was only lust. Or was it? She was a beautiful woman. More important, though, she challenged him at every turn, amusing him one moment, infuriating him the next, and at times filling him with tender feelings he'd never experienced with a female. All his adult life, David had clung to the hope that he'd one day find a woman who brought pure magic into his heart, someone who elicited all-consuming emotions within him, someone with whom he could laugh and cry, someone who could fill his world with love and contentment. Was it possible that he might find that magical something with Brianna when he'd failed to find it with Hazel Wright? David thought maybe so. Brianna was like spiced wine, heady and tempting in a way the schoolteacher wasn't. "Maybe I'm losing my mind," the thought made him grin into the bowl of his hat. On the surface, Brianna was the epitome of a well-bred lady, but under that cool, oh-so-proper exterior, she was stubborn, willful, and hot-tempered. He'd always hoped to find a malleable, tractable woman, someone sweet and easy to get along with. Life with Brianna would be like riding on a runaway stagecoach, one dip and jostle after another. And when she wasn't in a temper, she was so damnably decorous all the time, the type to freeze a man out during and after a quarrel instead of giving vent to her true feelings. Last night, he pushed her into giggling and acting silly, but that wasn't the norm for her, and damn it, there was more to marriage than having sex. David wanted a wife he could laugh with, someone who wasn't afraid to cut loose and forget about propriety sometimes. He wasn't sure Brianna could do that without a lot of prodding, and over time, prodding her constantly would get old. Even so, he found himself growing more attracted to her with each passing second. And if that wasn't a fine how-do-you-do, he didn't know what was. Sitting across from her daughter, Brianna sought sleep as well, with no more luck than David was having. Her thoughts were centered on the problems that could arise in a sham marriage. More than once, she'd glimpsed masculine appreciation in his eyes when he looked at her, and she would never forget that kiss last night. He seemed perfectly willing to keep his hands off her right now, but what if he changed his mind later? The marriage document in his saddlebag would make his taking of her illegal. Having been single all her life, Brianna was no expert on the baser natures of men, but she suspected that their physical needs were far more urgent than those of women. How could he hope to be happy and content in a platonic relationship? Emotionally drained, Brianna removed her hat and fingered the looped emerald ribbons at the crown. She'd never possessed anything so fine. In the convent, colorful garments had been forbidden, and all but the most subdued pieces of jewelry had been frowned upon. Adornments, the nuns had called them. Proper young ladies wore nothing ostentatious. As a girl, Brianna had yearned for a bright red dress and patent leather slippers studded at the toes with diamonds. That seemed so silly to her now. As an adult, she'd come to appreciate just having clothing, no matter how drab it was. Even so, she loved this emerald gown. Slipping her palm over the fine-grained silk, she smiled dreamily, wondering for a fleeting moment if God hadn't guided David to Glory Ridge. Whether he was Daphne's father or not, he offered the child everything that Brianna had always yearned to give her. Would it be so evil of her to simply accept this good fortune and say nothing more to David about the truth? He grew furious each time she brought it up, so why couldn't she simply acquiesce and keep quiet? Because she felt so guilty, she decided. He was revamping his whole life around a child that wasn't his, possibly even forsaking marriage to a woman he really loved. She'd tried several times to be honest with him, though. In the end, when the harsh truth smacked him between the eyes, he wouldn't be able to say that she'd been anything less than forthright. Let it go, a small voice whispered in her mind. Pray about it, have faith, and all will be well. Ah, Sister Teresa whispering to her again, Brianna thought. A very wise woman, that nun, for no matter how Brianna circled it, the dress shop idea had its appeal and would be the best arrangement for Daphne. It would, in fact, be nearly perfect. With David as her father, she would have a family, a grandmother, uncles, aunts, and cousins. She'd be loved and never want for anything. David had become her father in every way that counted. Daphne adored him, and he adored her. With a sigh, Brianna settled back on her seat and let her eyes drift closed. There were so many possible pitfalls in David's plan, though. What if someone in No Name discovered that their marriage was a sham? That would be utterly devastating for Daphne. And it would be wearing on both Brianna and David to live a lie, day in and day out. He would be consigning himself to a loveless future without a real wife to warm his bed. And when he discovered that he wasn't really Daphne's father, what would become of her and Daphne then? It was a bridge she would cross when she came to it, she supposed. She and Daphne had survived before, and they could do it again. Until then, Brianna would be like a leaf, blown this way and that by a wind over which she had no control. Pray about it, have faith, and all will be well. Their train pulled into Denver at 3:30 in the morning. Brianna, nearly blind with exhaustion, was relieved beyond measure when David decided they should get rooms at the hotel and postpone the last leg of their journey to No Name until the next day. Using the hotel telephone, he called Ace to arrange for their transportation. They were to be at the train station by noon, which would give them at least a few hours to rest before leaving the city. David went to a saloon up the street to see if he could get food, because all of them were hungry. He returned with steak sandwiches and a quart bottle of apple juice, which they could drink from water glasses in their rooms. Brianna answered his knock gratefully, accepted the cold fare, and bid him a hasty good night. She had learned her lesson the previous evening and didn't linger in the doorway, fearing he might kiss her again if she gave him an opportunity. Because it was so late, there was no hotel staff on duty to bring up tubs, so she and Daphne settled for spit baths. Brianna made short work of getting herself and the child dressed for bed. Then they sat on the edge of the mattress to eat. Brianna had just taken a bite of sandwich when a tap came at the door. She set aside her food and crossed the room. Who is it? David. I forgot to get some juice. Oh, Brianna quickly opened up. I'm sorry, I didn't think. He stepped in, holding an empty water glass. Brianna poured him a measure of apple juice and then stared up at him, uncertain what else to say. He smiled slightly. Thanks. The sandwich is dry, with nothing to help wash it down. She followed him back to the door and watched as he stepped out into the hall. Good night again, she said.
Good night. Be sure to lock up tight.
After finishing the meal, Brianna turned off the electric light, which was a novelty to her, and then joined her daughter in bed. Her last thought, as exhaustion blacked out her mind, was that on the morrow she would accompany David to No Name and meet his family. She had no doubt that they would welcome Daphne into their fold, but how would they feel about her, a wicked woman from David's past who'd gotten pregnant with his child out of wedlock? She was too tired to worry about it. David could deal with his family, blast it. She was only a leaf blowing in the wind. Chapter 16. Brianna was awestruck by the sumptuous appointments in Ace Keegan's passenger car. The seats with curved armrests were upholstered in dark green, cushiony leather that felt as soft as butter to the touch. Instead of planks, intricately patterned rugs of green, burgundy, and deep gold cushioned the floor. At one end, a hand-carved mahogany bar was stocked with different kinds of spirits, soft drinks, glasses, and an icebox filled with chilled snacks. Daphne enjoyed a sarsaparilla, slices of cheese, and an orange before curling up on the sofa for a nap. Sitting beside David in one of the armchairs, Brianna sipped a glass of sherry while he partook of a fine whiskey. Your family must be very influential in No Name, she observed.
I guess you might say that.
The realization struck her that David was a powerful man in his community, undoubtedly as respected in his own right as he was well-connected. She stared for a moment at his badge, which represented authority and dominance few men attained in their professions. As much as she'd come to trust him on the prairie, she knew things would be different now. What if he changed his mind about their agreement and insisted on a real marriage? She would have no one to turn to for help.
You feeling okay, Shamrock? The motion of the train isn't making you sick, I hope. With fewer cars, there's a little more movement, I reckon.
No, no, the car is lovely. I've never traveled in such luxury.
Ace doesn't spare coin when it comes to comfort, he told her. His home is simple in layout, just a ranch house, but it's got all the conveniences possible. Joseph and I have followed his lead. Lisa is still toying with the idea of modernizing his place.
Brianna suddenly remembered her question to David right before his shootout with the three ne'er-do-wells, and to distract herself from other far more unsettling thoughts, she decided to follow up on that. I've read stories about a gunslinger named Ace Keegan, she said, forcing a smile. Surely we're not discussing the same man. David turned his tumbler, studying the amber contents.
Will you fall over in a dead faint if I say we are?
Brianna did feel momentarily lightheaded. If David wasn't joking, then his family was far more than simply influential. At least one member was downright dangerous. The Ace Keegan I read about once killed three men with one bullet.
That was a freak accident. He shot the first guy, and then the bullet ricocheted to kill the second one. I think Ace fired another shot to kill the third fellow, but I could have my facts wrong. We don't pay those novels much mind because they're usually so far-fetched. The truth of what happened never makes for quite as good a story.
Brianna set aside her glass of sherry. So your older brother is the Ace Keegan?
Yes, gunslinger and gambler turned family man.
He never wears his Colts now unless he's forced to. He's a good man, Brianna. I think you'll like him.
Just know up front that nothing nettles him more than the outrageous stories told about him in those damned dime novels.
Thank you for the warning. I don't believe it would be wise to nettle Ace Keegan.
David threw back his head and barked with laughter. You can nettle him all you like. He'd never harm a hair on your head, and that's a fact.
Once in Nomine, David rented a buggy from the livery to drive them out to Ace's ranch. Brianna had hoped to postpone meeting the Keegan and Paxton clan until tomorrow, but David mixed that with, no way. They'll all be gathered at Ace's place, and the women will have a huge meal prepared to welcome you. If we don't show up, they'll be sorely disappointed.
Brianna was unaccountably tense. Out on the prairie, she'd been completely alone with David, except for Daphne, and she'd come to trust him in ways she'd never trusted another man. But this was different. He was taking her into his world. He was her spouse. And at the back of her mind, she kept returning to the reality of her situation, namely that husbands had absolute power if they chose to exercise it. They were the kings of their households, and in many cases, wives were treated with little regard. She didn't believe David would turn suddenly autocratic or consider her to be a possession, but way deep down where she couldn't rationalize her way past it, she felt uneasy and vulnerable. Daphne bounced on the buggy seat between Brianna and David, so excited to meet David's family that she was nearly beside herself. Brianna supposed that for the child it was indeed a momentous occasion. Daphne had never had relatives, none that acknowledged her, anyway, and now the little girl suddenly had a host of them. It was Grandma Dory this and Aunt Caitlin that. And she pestered David relentlessly to go over the names of everyone else so she wouldn't forget. When Brianna saw buildings in the distance, she turned to straighten Daphne's clothing and tidy her hair. Remember your manners now. Wait until you're properly introduced before addressing the adults. And once inside the house, you mustn't ask for anything. If you're offered something and you'd like to have some, what do you say? Daphne wrinkled her nose.
I say, please, that sounds wonderful, and thank you very much for offering.
David flashed Brianna a grin over the top of the child's head.
Shamrock, you're in for a big surprise. We aren't a family that stands on ceremony. Just relax, okay? None of them bite.
Brianna couldn't relax. She was about to meet people who had every reason to stand in judgment of her, and might also resent her for ruining David's life. As the house came into view, she made tight fists in her skirt, straightened her shoulders, and lifted her chin. No matter what they said or did, she would face them with pride. A little dark-haired boy, Brianna guessed to be a bit over 3, was the first to spot the buggy. He tore across the front veranda, shouting,
Uncle David! Uncle David!
Little Ace, David said, going on 3 1/2 and full of mischief.
Brianna thought he was adorable, with olive skin, shoe-button eyes, and a shock of pitch-black hair. He was dressed in a blue pullover shirt, denim knickers bloused at the knees, black stockings already smeared with dirt, and sturdy little black boots. David drew the buggy to a halt, looped the reins, and set the brake. Lucy, tethered to the back of the conveyance with Blue and Acorn, let loose with a happy hee-haw. The mule clearly recognized her surroundings and knew she was almost home. The geldings joined in with shrill knickers to voice their excitement, too. Just then, an extremely tall, jet-haired man in jeans and a blue chambray shirt stepped out onto the porch, holding the screen ajar behind him to offer passage to a beautiful, slightly built redhead in a blue-checked gingham day dress. In her arms, she held a raven-haired little girl who was chubby and darling in a lacy pink frock.
Ace, his wife Caitlin, and their youngest, Dory Sue, named after my ma, David supplied.
He leaped from the buggy and circled the matched set of blacks to come around and help Brianna down.
And there comes Joseph with his wife Rachel and little Joe.
Brianna was so startled by the sight of Joseph, who from a distance appeared to be a dead ringer for David, that she lost her footing on the step. David caught her around the waist to keep her from falling and swung her easily to the ground. At his touch, Brianna's breath caught. Was it only her imagination, or was David acting more proprietary than he ever had before? Calm down, Shamrock. It's just my family, you know. They're happy to have you here. Brianna wasn't so sure about that. Though Ace wore no weapons, his stance and air were of a man who could look death in the eye 1,000 times and never blink. Brianna didn't miss the way he assessed her from head to toe with his dark eyes. His fiery-haired wife came down to stand at the left of the front steps with him, and Joseph and his wife took their positions to the right. It was almost as if they'd rehearsed the greeting and stood off to each side to make way for a queen. And then she appeared, an older lady in a lavender house dress with perfectly coiffed blonde hair shimmering with streaks of silver. Brianna froze, staring at her with fascinated incredulity. In another 50 years, it could have been Daphne standing on that porch. The resemblance was astounding. No, Brianna corrected herself. It was downright unbelievable. Little wonder David remained so fully convinced that Daphne was his. The little girl truly was the spitting image of his mother. Dory Paxton remained on the porch for a moment, her slender hands pressed to her heart. Even from many feet away, Brianna saw her blue eyes, the same color as Daphne's, go bright with tears. Then, with her skirt lifted in one hand and exquisite grace of carriage, she came down the porch steps and cut across the patchy front yard, her gaze never wavering from the child still sitting in the buggy. She bypassed David and Brianna, stepped between the iron wheels, and lifted her arms. "Hurry, hurry," she said with a laugh. "Come give your grandmother a hug." Daphne launched herself into the woman's arms. Dory Paxton caught the child fiercely close, swayed side to side for a moment, and then beamed a smile at David, her lovely face streaked with tears. "She looks just like me. I can't believe it. Just like me. What a lovely gift to bring home to your mother." "Ain't she something?" David laughed and curled an arm around Brianna's shoulders. She stiffened under the weight of his hand on her upper arm. "Not my imagination," she decided. He was letting everyone present know that she belonged to him. "I almost fainted when I first saw her." Dory stepped over to touch Brianna's hand, then leaned forward to kiss her cheek. "Forgive my appalling lack of manners, dear, but a grandmother does have her priorities." She cricked her neck to study Daphne's face again and beamed another smile. "My, my, such a grown-up girl you are, Daphne." She turned so the child could see her other relatives. Pointing, she introduced them. Daphne seemed particularly taken with little Joe, Joseph's son, who would celebrate his first birthday in only a few weeks. Little Ace ran up to tug on Daphne's slipper. "Get down, Daphne, get down. Come see our kittens. We got lots and lots." "Hold on for just a moment, little Ace," Dory said. "First, let your Uncle David introduce his wife to everyone." The introductions passed in a blur for Brianna. The famous Ace Keegan stepped forward first, gave her a firm hug, and said, "Welcome to our family." To Brianna, he seemed as tall and sturdy as a tree. Next, she was being embraced by Caitlin and treated to a wet, open-mouthed kiss on the cheek from Dory Sue. Upon closer inspection, Brianna confirmed that Joseph was indeed a dead ringer for David, his mannerisms and speech nearly the same. He hugged her with a clench of strong arms, then set her back a step to survey her face. "She'll do," he told David with a smile. Rachel, still holding little Joe, gave Brianna a shyer greeting, but it was nonetheless welcoming. She was a lovely woman, diminutive of stature, with large blue eyes,
unicorn silk blonde hair and an angelic countenance.
Now can we go see the kitties?
Little Ace cried. Dory laughed and set Daphne on her feet.
Mind the cow and horses, Little Ace. I don't want you getting kicked.
The warning fell on deaf ears. The little boy was already racing toward the barn with Daphne following in his dusty wake. Caitlin handed Dory's suit to her husband. I'd better go supervise. She settled sparkling blue eyes on Brianna. Would you like to come along to see our kittens? Brianna felt David's palm at the center of her spine, nudging her forward. The heat of his hand gave her a start. As she fell into step behind Caitlin, who was hurrying to catch up with her son, she heard Joseph's wife, Rachel, say, You take little Joe. I want to see the kittens, too. Before Brianna knew quite how it happened, she was in the barn with two just-met women who called her by name and acted as if they'd known her forever. It was the oddest experience of her life. No sidelong looks of disapproval, no uncomfortable questions, no sense of separateness. Brianna felt overdressed, for both of her sisters-in-law wore cotton, not silk. She comforted herself with the thought that their simple gingham dresses were far nicer than the one she'd worn the day before yesterday, and she was glad David had insisted on buying her new outfits, inappropriate for the surroundings though they might be. At least she didn't feel humiliated beyond bearing. Feeling absurdly overdone, Brianna removed her hat and hooked it over a stall post. The dim interior lacked the rank odor of manure that had always assailed her nostrils in Ricker's barn, which told her that Ace, like David, took excellent care of his stock. Lifting her skirts, she sat on the scattered hay with the other two women to watch the children admire the kittens. Daphne's face glowed as she lifted a tiny bit of tabby fluff to her cheek. Oh, Mama, I've always wanted a kitten. Caitlin, strikingly beautiful, with her glorious red hair, refined features, and vibrant eyes, laughed musically. Take your pick. When they're old enough, I'll send one home with you. Rachel interjected. Oh, no, you don't. Daphne can come to my house and take her pick now. Mine are already old enough to leave their mamas. I offered first, Caitlin cried. Then, grabbing Little Ace by the backs of his hands, she said, No, no, you be gentle. Ears are to hear with and eyes are to see with. If you poke, I'll give you a swat. Little Ace immediately lightened his hold on the kitten and, following Daphne's example, held the bit of fur to his cheek.
Can I have one too, Mama?
Caitlin rolled her eyes. I'm afraid you can have all of them except for the one Cousin Daphne picks. Papa says we've plenty of milk, cream and rodents to have 100 cats. Aren't you a lucky little boy?
I am, Little Ace smiled at his mother. I want this one. It's soft and smells good.
Caitlin ruffled his hair.
Mind that you're gentle, then.
Rachel lifted the mewling feline she held to admire its markings. I can correct it, Daphne. This is the one for you. A baby girl with a diamond shape on her forehead. If you take her, you'll always have baby kittens to love, too. Just make sure your papa approves and commits himself to supplying plenty of milk and food for your cat family. Daphne took the kitten, her blue eyes round with wonder. Looking up at Brianna, she whispered,
Do you think papa will let me have her, Mama?
In that moment, Brianna would have believed anything was possible.
He might. I'm going to call her Diamond, Daphne cried.
Dory entered the barn and came to sit on the hay with them. The circle was now complete. She admired Daphne's kitten.
I don't think Diamond is the right name for her,
she said thoughtfully, her brow creasing in a thoughtful frown, just the way Daphne's did.
See how the diamond shape is up between her little ears? I think she should be called Tiara.
Daphne took the kitten back to study her markings.
Like a princess, Grandma?
Absolutely,
Dory said, dimpling her cheek. My granddaughter deserves nothing less than a cat with royal blood. Brianna stared stupidly at her daughter and Dory Paxton. The resemblance between the older woman and little girl wasn't only physical. They shared mannerisms and facial expressions. Watching them together and knowing that the two were not related by blood, Brianna could scarcely believe her eyes. Dory even had the same strawberry mark on her neck.
Well, Rachel said, springing to her feet, we can no longer count on Grandma Dory to be watching over dinner. I'd better get back before the men take over.
Oh, lawsy, Caitlin jumped up too. Ace will start playing with Dory Sue and forget all about my bread.
Little Ace started to cry because he didn't want to leave the kittens. Caitlin quickly dispensed with his tears by saying,
run, Daphne. I bet little Ace can't catch you.
And the race was on. Brianna fetched her hat. As she departed from the barn in the company of David's female relatives, she swatted at her silk skirts to dispense with the hay.
I think I need to visit the dress shop for some more practical gowns. I can see right now that silk will never do for everyday wear.
The dress shop? You needn't do that. Caitlin grinned impishly. Rachel and I both sew, and our husbands have supplied us with the loveliest sewing machines you've ever clapped eyes on.
Rachel nodded. I have some yellow gingham that would look fabulous on you. I thought it would work for me, but when I got it home and held it up in front of a mirror, I looked like a yellow blob.
And I have a length of pink, Caitlin exclaimed. I've always wanted to wear pink, but it simply isn't usually possible for me. It clashes with my hair something awful.
You both sew?
Dory, trailing slightly behind them, answered that question.
So, they are masters of the art.
I have heaps of patterns, Rachel cried. Just wait until you see. I've got all the latest fashions.
Brianna was delighted to have sisters-in-law who shared her passion for creating gowns.
Uh-oh, that won't bode well for a dress shop. David mentioned buying me the one in town. It doesn't sound as if I'll get much business.
Caitlin's eyes lighted up.
Are you a designer?
Brianna considered the question. Normally, she would reply with modest understatement, but these women made her feel as if she was one of them, and it didn't seem wrong to state the truth.
It is my aim to one day become famous for my originals. I've only had the opportunity to design a few gowns. But cost always a drawback because it was in a small town. But with what I had to work with, I feel that I created some smashing successes.
Truly?
Dory stepped forward to lock arms with Brianna.
How lovely! The dressmaker in No Name is older and doesn't keep up with the trends. If I want something high quality and fashionable, I must go back to Frisco for fittings. It would be so much easier if I could do that here. Are you really that good?
Brianna thought about it for a moment, and deep in her heart of hearts, where impossible dreams had taken root, she did believe she was.
Well, it's all very subjective, isn't it? What I can definitely say is that I'm talented at sketching and producing what I draw. So perhaps we could spend the day creating some lovely gowns on paper to see if we share the same vision.
Oh, lands!
Rachel planted a hand over her breasts and spun in a circle.
I must ask Joseph to fill out a blank draft so I can go a little crazy. I'm due for at least two really fabulous gowns. My Aunt Amanda is in Paris right now. She sent me some pamphlets of the fashions there. How lovely would it be to greet her when she gets home wearing an eye-popping Parisian look-alike?
In that moment, Brianna felt as if she was truly a part of this family. It was a heady, wonderful feeling. There was only one fly in her ointment, the inescapable fact that she didn't truly belong. The early supper, which Brianna helped to prepare, was mind-boggling to both her and Daphne. So much food for only one family. There was fried chicken and pork chops, mashed potatoes, green beans, canned corn swimming in butter, fabulous yeast rolls, fish from the oven,
two huge pitchers of chilled milk and salad, all the ingredients of which Dory had collected from the grasslands around Ace's house. Little Ace was perched on a stack of books on the side bench of the long plank table. The toddlers each sat at a corner in elevated chairs with swing-around eating trays that Ace had made. Just as the family surrounded the table to say the blessing before sitting down, the front door swung open, and another man who greatly resembled David stepped inside, dusting his jeans with a brown Stetson and stomping his boots on the threshold rug. "Sorry I'm late. Had a heifer go down while calving. She almost didn't make it." David unfolded his hands and went to hug his brother. As he turned back to the room, he said, "Brianna, my baby brother, Isa. Isa, my wife, Brianna, and my daughter, Daphne." Isa, with his David-like face and blue eyes, pushed at his short blonde hair and whacked his hat against his leg again. "I'm too dirty to shake hands, but I'm glad to make your acquaintance, Brianna." His mouth relaxed into a grin. "Hey, Daphne, it's good to finally meet you." Ace, who loomed like a dark sentinel behind his chair at the head of the table, said, "Between kittens and dinner preparation, I barely met them myself." Inclining his head at the one empty place setting, he added, "Go wash up. We'll wait for you if you hurry, and don't let the food get cold. Just remember to scrub behind your ears." "Jesus, Ace, I'm not a pop anymore." Dory spoke up. "Another word like that, young man, and I'll be scrubbing your mouth with lye soap. You'll not take the Lord's name in vain in front of the children." Brianna jerked her gaze to David's. His lean cheeks went a bit pink. Then he winked at her. She ducked her head to hide her smile. "Sorry, Ma." Isa paused before heading up the hall to the washroom, which Brianna had visited, and now held a commode, a sink, and a tub, all with piped-in hot and cold water. To her, those were incredible luxuries. Glancing at the children, Isa said, "Jesus and I are best friends, so I say his name real regular during prayer. I meant no disrespect." He plucked a small leather-bound book from the waistband of his jeans. He wore a hand-tooled belt and also a gun belt, much like David's, which sported a holstered Colt revolver at each hip. "My Bible," he said. "I plan to be a preacher someday soon." "Off what?" Ace asked. Isa drew up his shoulders, met his older brother's gaze with eyes that suddenly sparked like flint, and said, "You heard me. I'm going to be a preacher." "Jesus H. Christ," Ace whispered. Dory said, "Kitten, where is your lye soap?" "Ma," Ace said with a warning note in his voice, "this is no time for that. He's serious." "The two of you are talking like sailors, and I won't have it in front of the children." Brianna totally agreed and was mentally applauding Dory for speaking her mind when David broke out with, "For Pete's sake, Ma, Isa just said he's going to become a preacher." He gestured toward his younger brother with a spread hand. "You can't blame us for questioning his sanity. He's a gunslinger, same as we are. How in the hell does that make sense? He can't read from the good book and tell people how to live their lives when he's packing six-shooters." Isa took a step back into the dining area. "Why the hell can I? I can believe in the good Lord and still wear guns. Where does it say I can't defend myself against violence and still be a Christian? You need to read the Bible, David. Jesus was no pansy ass. I'll wear my coats and quote scripture, and I'll reach people who are struggling to survive in this harsh country, carrying a rifle in one hand and a shovel in the other." "I don't think defending myself is wrong," David retorted, "but given the fact that I do defend myself and will continue to do so when I'm threatened, I don't think I'm fit to be a man of the cloth, and neither are you." Brianna glanced at her daughter. Daphne's eyes were as round as supper plates. Returning her attention to the Keegan-Paxton family, Brianna decided that her arrival as a fallen woman with a heretofore illegitimate daughter in tow had just taken second seat. "Bless you, Isa," he'd drawn all the attention away from her. The next instant, Brianna wasn't so sure Isa was a godsend. Joseph, David, and Ace all surged away from the table in a wave of formidable masculinity to confront their youngest brother, who stood with his worn Bible clutched in one brutal fist. Brianna feared there might be a physical clash. Just the possibility had her racing around the table, grabbing up her daughter, and retreating to a far corner of the front room. To her amazement, Rachel and Caitlin never moved from behind their chairs, leaving their children in harm's way. Their only concession to the heated debate was to place their folded hands on the backs of their chairs, as if they were still waiting for a reverent blessing and eats.
"You don't have what it takes to be a preacher, Isa," Ace intoned firmly. "I'm with David. What the hell are you thinking?"
Joseph chimed in. "For God's sake, Isa, you cuss worse than I do. Some impression you'd make." David capped it all by saying, "Son of a bitch, I bring my wife and daughter here for a first family dinner, and what does Isa do but make the announcement of the year and ruin everything? Do you always have to be the center of attention?"
Dory sent Caitlin a pointed look. Caitlin hurried into the kitchen and returned with a bar of soap in her hand. Dory caught hold of it, straightened her narrow shoulders, and to Brianna's horror, waded right into the middle of the fray, with men towering around her. She looked each of them directly in the eye.
"Enough! You're behaving like ill-mannered galoots."
She held up the bar. "You can continue with this foolishness and eat lye soap, or you can return to the table, bow your heads for the blessing, and dine like the gentleman I raised you to be." With a bit of groaning, the men returned to the table while Isa went to the water closet for a quick scrub. He returned with dampness darkening his blonde hair. His face, ears, neck, and hands were free of dirt. Brianna repositioned herself and Daphne in their former places, and Ace, at the head of the table, commenced with the blessing. As the food was passed, Brianna expected the men to remain silent. But before the mashed potatoes reached her, David said to Isa, "You aren't going to get all preachy, are you? I don't think I can handle having a holier-than-thou brother." Isa swallowed, dabbed at his mouth with his napkin, and said,
"That's where most preachers fail, by acting holier-than-thou. They set standards no normal human being can live up to, and then they become laughingstocks when they fail to do as they preach. I'll never claim to be without sin, and I'll never expect anybody else to be either. We're all just people doing the best we can to live decent lives."
"Since when did you decide to wear a white collar?"
Ace asked. "I've been thinking about it for a while." He glanced apologetically at Caitlin. "I'd honor you by becoming a priest, Caitlin, but I'd like to marry and have children someday, so I don't think that's my calling."
Dory piped in with, "I, for one, am very pleased to hear that Isa is considering a religious calling. At least some of our Bible study at night rubbed off on one of you."
The remainder of the meal passed with mostly pleasant exchanges, the only exceptions being when the males of the family ribbed one another. At one point, Dory excused herself to collect her childhood scrapbook and show off a daguerreotype of herself at about Daphne's age. Brianna could only gape at the likeness when the book was passed to her. The resemblance to Daphne was uncanny. Upon closer inspection, however, Brianna determined that any blonde little girl with fine features might resemble the image in the daguerreotype. Granted, the similarities were there. That was undeniable. But the Keegans and Paxtons were making more of them than was warranted.
"Daphne has Dory's chin," Rachel noted, "and she even has the Paxton birthmark."
Caitlin remarked, "That dimple in the child's cheek is another dead giveaway."
Ace laughed and said to David,
"That is one child you can't deny."
David beamed with pride. Brianna went with the flow of conversation, nodding and smiling in agreement. What else could she do? Even if she blurted out the truth and convinced these people to believe her,
it would destroy Daphne. When it came time to clear the table, Brianna had started to relax around the men. The fearsome Ace Keegan was a gentle giant with his children and wife. Joseph spent more time holding little Joe than Rachel did and was wearing a goodly amount of mashed potatoes by the time he'd finished trying to feed his son. The men rolled up their shirt sleeves to clean the kitchen, which surprised Brianna. Ace washed, David dried, put away, and Issa took charge of the leftovers. The women were shooed out to sit on the veranda and visit. "Here it comes," Brianna thought. She'd be grilled with questions now, and she had no idea how to answer because she wasn't sure what her husband had told everyone. "How did you meet David? Why did you never contact him when you realized you were expecting? How did the two of you finally reunite?" But the questions never came. Instead, the conversation centered around Caitlin's newly planted vegetable garden, Dory's hobby of collecting wild edibles, the wildflowers presently in bloom, sewing, and Rachel's talent for crocheting and tatting. Dory Sue was just learning to walk, so Daphne held the child's hands and helped her totter back and forth across the yard, while little Ace galloped circles around them on an imaginary stallion named Spirit. Rachel nursed little Joe and rocked him to sleep. When David finally appeared on the porch to take his family home, Brianna was sad to see the evening end. Daphne was having the time of her life, playing with her little cousins, and the adult conversations had been stimulating. It had been a very long time since Brianna had been able to chat at length with other ladies, and once she left with David, they would be entirely alone again, save for Daphne. As if David sensed her reluctance to leave, he said, "You'll see everyone off in Shamrock. All our ranches are a hop, skip, and jump away from each other." Goodbyes coupled with affectionate hugs followed, yet another ceremony Brianna had long been denied. Once back in the buggy with David and Daphne, she felt happy, sad, and tense, a confusing mix. As welcoming as everyone had been, she and Daphne were imposters who were being included on false pretenses, and it was anyone's guess how long it would be before the truth came out and ruined everything. En route to David's ranch, which Brianna learned was named Wolverine Flats for the creek that angled through it, David talked almost nonstop, pointing out to her and Daphne where each of his brother's ranches were located. In Brianna's estimation, they were a lot farther apart than a hop, skip, and a jump. But she supposed that, given the large tracts of land for each parcel, adjoining dooryards were impossible. In the fading light of day, she glimpsed oak trees, willows along the stream bed, and wildflowers galore. It was beautiful country, a wonderful place to raise a child. David's ranch proved to be an almost exact replica of Ace's, with a long entrance road that led to a large, tidy barn, sturdy paddocks, and grassland rolling out from the buildings for as far as the eye could see. Barking and growling in a friendly way, a yellow and white, long-haired dog bounced across the yard to greet the buggy when David stopped in front of the rambling, one-story house. "Hey, Sam!" David called as he swung out of the conveyance. He spent a moment rustling the canine's thick fur and scratching him behind the ears. Then he lifted Daphne to the ground. "I brought you a new friend. Guard her with your life." Brianna, exiting the buggy by herself, had to smile at that pronouncement because Daphne was already on her knees with both arms locked around Sam's neck. It was apparently love at first sight. Sam returned the affection with wet doggy kisses and curious sniffs of the child's hair. A second later, girl and canine raced off to play. A middle-aged man in jeans and a blue work shirt emerged from the barn. David waved hello and called, "Put them up for the night, would you, Rob? Rub them down good and give all of them an extra ration of oats. I'll return the buggy in the morning." The man lifted his tan hat in greeting, his brown hair trimmed neatly above the ears, whipping in the evening breeze.
Will do, Voss. Welcome home.
David came around to grasp Brianna's arm.
You ready for the grand tour?
Noting the edge of humor in David's voice, Brianna realized that he felt his house was far from grand, but to her it was a veritable palace. A deep veranda swept the length of the front, accommodating two rockers off to one side and a swing at the other. She could picture herself relaxing there of an evening to watch the sunset. Two double-hung windows flanked the front door, which had been crafted with thick beams of wood, providing a safe barricade against intruders. It was a house with a friendly facade, unprepossessing but comfortable-looking. Brianna had never had a real home, unless she counted the orphanage, and having recently lived in an attic room no larger than a closet, she doubted that David had any idea how lucky he was. When Brianna stepped inside, a sense of homecoming filled her. The large living area served as a sitting room and dining room, with a spacious kitchen leading off from it at the far end. A leather sofa and two armchairs bracketed a stone fireplace to the right. David's long plank supper table, she noted with relief, was lined with high-backed chairs instead of benches, which were difficult for a lady in skirts to manage.
It's in sore need of some fixing up, David told her. I thought of the basics, but I'm not much for decorating. I've been meaning to get curtains.
He released her arm to rub beside his nose.
Maybe it's just as well I didn't. Ladies kind of like to do their own choosing when it comes to stuff like that.
It's wonderful, just as it is, Brianna said, thinking to herself that she wouldn't be here long enough to worry about curtains. But, oh, what a fabulous place for any child to call home, even if only briefly. When Brianna had dreamed of getting a proper house for Daphne, she'd always pictured it tiny and furnished with wobbly, scarred things she bought secondhand. Never had she imagined anything this grand. All it needs are a few touches of color here and there to brighten the rooms. He showed off his kitchen, which sported a new cook stove with double ovens, a center firebox, dual warmers, and a sizable water reservoir. Open shelves lined with dishes and foodstuffs held court over varnished countertops and an oversized icebox. In one corner sat a washing machine, the likes of which Brianna had never seen. As if guessing her thoughts, David said, "It's rigged up to drain through the floor, so you don't have to haul buckets of water outside to dump them. I got the idea from Darby, Rachel's uncle by recent marriage. Not so long ago, Rachel was housebound. Long story, that. Anyway, Darby had her all set up so she never had to step foot outside, and I copied some of his inventions to make it more convenient here." David was about to give her a tour of the water closet and bedrooms when a thump came at the front door. It was Rob, the hired man, arms laden with David's saddlebags and all their other possessions.
"Good man," David said, setting his saddlebags just inside the door and then relieving the man of the stuffed pillowcases and packages. "You see my daughter out there anywhere?" "She's off with Sam, checking out the kittens in the barn. Judging by the way she's latched onto the yellow one, I got a hunch she'll have a new family member soon."
David was laughing as he closed the door.
"I'd forgotten about little girls and kittens. My sister Eden loved them, and we always had two or three cats underfoot."
"Will Daphne be all right out there alone?" Brianna asked.
"Sam's with her, and Rob will be around."
He sauntered toward her with the pillowcases, dumping the one filled with food at the kitchen entrance, then leading Brianna up the hallway.
"I've got five bedrooms. Mine's at the far end. You and Daphne can take your pick of the others. The beds are all made up fresh."
Brianna peeked into the two rooms on the right, but hesitated to step inside. "These will do," she said.
I like that they're next to each other. That way I'll hear if Daphne needs me. David put all her pillowcases inside the door of the room closest to his and then turned to rest a muscular arm against the jamb. No lanterns had been lighted, so only dusky light from the bare window behind him played over the room. In the shadows, his eyes shimmered like polished pewter. She saw his jaw muscle ripple. For an instant, she feared he might try to kiss her, or more. Instead, he only trailed his gaze slowly over her face. Beneath his thoughtful study, her cheeks started to burn. And she'll also be able to hear you. Isn't that what you're thinking? He said it softly and didn't pose it as a question. Whatever do you mean? Brianna's heart had started to race. It seemed to her that the breadth of his shoulders took up the entire doorway. She folded her arms at her waist. All mothers like to be within hearing distance of their children at night. Don't try to bullshit me, Shamrock. You've been as jumpy as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rockers ever since we got on the train in Denver. I'm thinking you've got some notion in your head that things are going to change between you and me now, that I'll suddenly decide to make this a marriage in fact. Not knowing what else to say, she blurted, "You are my husband. You have papers to prove it." He continued to search her gaze. She had the awful feeling that he could see clear to her soul. Who did this to you? Where along the way did you start thinking that every man you're alone with is going to turn on you? Brianna's throat felt dry. She wasn't sure she could speak. Her voice came out crackly and weak. You ask questions, David, but you don't like my answers. You say you're a stickler for the truth, but you don't want to hear it. My past experiences with other men are all intertwined with a story you believe is a pack of lies. His eyes began to smolder. There, you see? She challenged shakily. How can you expect me to tell you my darkest secrets when all you're going to do is get mad? He followed her example and folded his arms. She had the uncomfortable feeling he did so to control himself, to make sure he didn't give in to the urge to put his hands on her. It upsets me when you imply that Daphne isn't mine. You saw how my family reacted when they saw her. There is no mistake, Brianna. She's my daughter. Brianna turned to move away from him up the hall to the front of the house. While he was in this mood, she wasn't about to enter that bedroom to sort through her and Daphne's things. He'd stand behind her and block the doorway. Before you run off, let me make one thing clear. Brianna halted and turned to look at him. What is that? If I was of a mind, I could turn you every which way but loose with one hand tied behind my back. He inclined his head at her person. You're half my size. You wouldn't stand a chance against me. Taking the room next to Daphne won't keep you safe. It's simple enough for a man to keep a woman from screaming while he does his worst to her. He thumped the jamb with the toe of his boot. And there isn't a door in this entire house strong enough to keep me out if I want in. A tremor ran the length of Brianna's body. Are you threatening me, David? He smiled slightly. Nope, just stating the facts and hoping to ease your mind. Ease my mind? She asked incredulously. By saying things like that to me? Yep. I won't say I don't want you, Shamrock. It'd be a lie. But if I meant to take you by strength of arm, I would have done it by now. Who is there to stop me? It's not like you can go to the town marshal and say I raped you. Brianna's stomach clenched and rolled. That's part of it, isn't it? Why you're all of a sudden nervous around me again. The situation has shifted. We're on my home ground, and I'm the law around these parts.
that marriage document in my bag is playing real heavy on your mind.
David, I... He held up a hand. Don't deny it. I felt the tension in you as I helped you off the train. At Ace's place, when I put my arm around your shoulders, I felt you flinch away. When Caitlin invited you to go see the kittens and I nudged you forward, you jerked as if I had stuck you with a pin.
Yes, she confessed in a whisper. We're married.
Men have all the power. You're influential in this town.
Of course, I've had moments when I thought of all that.
He sighed and bent his head. When he lifted it, he said, Shamrock, you'd be in no more danger here in this bedroom with me than you were out on the prairie. Feeling nervous and jumpy is a waste of your energy, not to mention that it's plumb foolish.
He pushed erect and sidled toward her. When she put her back to the wall to let him pass, he stopped, moving his blue gaze slowly over her face, and then cupped her chin in his hand, trailing his thumb lightly over her cheek.
Maybe someday you'll tell me who the bastard was who made you so leery. Maybe you won't. But always bear in mind one thing.
What? She asked thinly.
I'm not that man.
He released her and strode up the hallway, never looking back.
While you unpack, I'll go check on my animals. I'll corral Daphne while I'm out there and bring her back with me. You may as well settle in good and proper. When I return the buggy in the morning, I'll stop by the dress shop to talk with Clarissa Denny to see if she's interested in selling, but even if her answer is yes, negotiating a price and all the details may take a while.
Brianna sank limply against the wall, the tension in her body draining away. When she heard the front door slam closed behind him, she released a shaky breath. As crazy as she knew it was, she felt better. David had an odd way of offering comfort, but somehow it had worked. He truly was different from all the others. She was safe with him. She'd been foolish to let doubts slip into her mind. She just pushed away from the wall when she heard someone re-enter the house. The sturdy thump of a man's boots echoed through the sitting area and dining room. David reappeared at the front of the hall.
Just occurred to me that the least I could do is make sure you have light to unpack by.
He strode past her and into the bedroom. She watched as he struck a match and touched it to the wick of a lantern on the mahogany bedside table. A golden glow filled the room as he adjusted the brightness.
I could have done that, she said.
I don't mind doing things for you, Shamrock.
He graced her with a crooked grin.
The way I was raised up, that's what husbands are for, to be helpful.
As he turned to leave, Brianna said, David, wait. He paused to regard her.
I'm sorry,
she whispered. Then, in a stronger voice, she said, I meant no insult. It's just, well, I've never known a man like you, and it's all too easy for me to take your measure by the behavior of others in the past. Does that make any sense?
He nodded. Perfect sense. Life can be a harsh teacher, and once lessons have been driven home, it's hard to change your way of thinking.
It'll get easier with time.
In the meanwhile, try to relax and have some faith in me. That marriage document is only a piece of paper. It has no bearing on who I am. I'm not going to slap it down on the table some night and change the terms of our agreement. If our relationship changes to something more, it will be because you want it that way, not because I insist on it.
After he left the room and closed the door behind him, Brianna stood with her fingertips pressed to her lips, so close to tears that it was all she could do to blink them away. David Paxton stirred feelings and yearnings within her that she'd never felt for another man. Fear one moment, desire the next. And at every turn, just when she expected him to take unfair advantage of her, he proved her wrong,
She'd lived all of her adult life trying to avoid men, ever distrusting them. Never in her wildest imaginings had she entertained the possibility that someone like David might exist. He made her want things she couldn't possibly have. He filled her head with fantastical wishes and dreams. What a cruel twist of fate that everything between them was built upon a terrible misunderstanding.
And that, my dear listener, is our reading of Lucky Penny for the day. And so, goes Dot, who do we got with us, and see if they have any questions or comments?
Well, God the Father, Son, Holy Ghost, Band of Angels, you and me.
All right, so what did you think, at least?
Oh, very interesting. I like this. Of course, I've read it before, so it wasn't like a surprise.
Yeah, but at least so far, what do you think? Don't give anything away.
I won't. It's good. It's really nice. I like the book.
All right. So I like the part when they got into the dinner table there. and he comes in there, the guy, Isa, he comes in there. And I'm going to be a preacher. And then he says that, and they all stand up there and start arguing. And the mother comes over here with a bar of soap.
Oh, I remember that. That was funny.
All right. So, well, with that, we are just going to, since we don't have no other questions, comments, or anything, I think we'll just say good night, good evening to everybody. And you could go, and you can always check out Six and Road at 8 p.m. Eastern on Station 1. You call 424-243-9617, 424-243-9617. And then, of course, tomorrow you get the great gospel shows that we have, the one for the children on this station at 4 p.m., the Wednesday Children's Bible Time at 4 p.m. Eastern, and you call 515-605-9340, 515-605-9340, 4 p.m. Eastern. And then at 7 p.m. Eastern, you get the Wednesday night Bible study, and that's at 7 p.m. Eastern on Station 1, and you call 424-243-9617. So God bless everybody. We'll catch you tomorrow, and God bless.
God bless everyone, too. Have a nice day. Love you.